Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very 235th episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games, and board games. I'm joined today by Quinton Smith.
Hello, board games.
He's sat right opposite me. We're in Quinton's flat for this one on your big, nice sofa.
It's too big, Tom. What am I going to do when I move?
You could sit all the way on the other end of this sofa and you could be so far away from me and it would be like we're having a podcast at the end of those big like banquet tables.
Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly... Or like Vladimir Putin's table, yeah.
Yeah,
if I move house, I can't even sell my big green sofa.
Yeah,
because no one... Who's going to buy a sofa this big?
I was pulling us in one direction and you're just thinking about where you're going to have to put this sofa. Are you going to move out of this flat ever, though? Is this going to be your tomb?
Depends what my landlord does. Have I ever mentioned on the podcast that my landlord is a Shut Up and Sit Down fan?
Shout out to...
Oh, I'm not going to say his name.
I was going to censor his name.
Okay, if you're going to censor it, that's fine. Yeah. Shout out to... If you're listening to this, you're probably not. I think you mostly watch the video content and borrow my board games, which is a peculiar lopsided relationship for a Shut Up and Sit Down fan to have with me and the brand.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take my money. It's kind of the reverse of how most relationships work with Shut Up and Sit Down.
Quinns, we've been playing a load of two-player games for this podcast.
We have. This is a two-player special, isn't it?
It's a two-player-only special. We're going to be talking about three games on this podcast. We're going to be talking about Sail, a game about collectively steering a pirate ship and trying to avoid a kraken and trying to see a whale. We're going to be talking about Nawali, an Aztec card game about merging a possum with a goat. And we're going to be talking about Dogfight, a four-player game about driving planes.
I thought we were going to reveal that later.
Later on in the podcast. I feel like we should be honest with the people at home that there is going to be one large game.
Dogfight is a game that from the outside looks like it should be a two-player game, right?
You brought it to a pub expecting it to be a two-player game.
Oh yeah, I did literally.
And then you were like,
that.
Oh, it's four-player. And there was a lady next to us who was a pilot or was a flight attendant. And you were like, do you want to play this with us? Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, she was a flight attendant and she was studying overnight in our city, Brighton.
And she looked at you like, okay.
With
fear in her eyes.
I didn't actually invite her to play. If I did, I was only being polite. Look, okay. I was going to say something about Sail.
What if she's listening to the podcast right now?
I don't think Sail is the first game or the last game we're going to be talking about, because we're going to be talking about these games in order of quality, right?
We're talking about them in reverse order to how I describe them.
Correct. We're going to be talking about Dogfight first, followed by Nawali, followed by Sail, because Sail's really quite good. Sail is not a game where you play pirates. You've been pirate-pilled. It's just a game where you steer a boat and you're telling me...
It literally refers to them as pirate cards.
Son of a bitch. Let's move on. Wait.
Yeah?
It calls them pirate cards.
Yes.
That doesn't mean you're pirates.
What? The cards that ostensibly represent the players are called
pirate
cards.
They could just
cards.
Be people, like prisoners you're transporting.
Wait, the pirates... Okay, so the pirates are... But you use their powers?
Yeah.
So the pirates are indentured
servants
to your boat.
What are you
going to
not use the power of a prisoner?
If you have a pirate locked up on your ship...
then that makes you the opposite of a pirate, probably.
No. What, it makes you the law?
Yeah.
You think this is a game where you imprison a pirate and use their special powers whilst avoiding a kraken on the high sea?
Look, I just tried to redeem my error, Tom, and you, Thomas Brewster, and you've bogged us down.
I'm dragging you back into the dirt.
Okay.
Let's do a podcast.
Okay.
Quinns, we played a game called Dogfight together with our two other friends for this two-player game special.
We did. What could be more of a two-player game than a two-player
game
that involves two pairs of two players, which is what Dogfight literally does. So Dogfight by Ryan Venner and Liam Wilson is a game about biplanes in sort of World War I era fighting. You're going to have two players in one plane. You've got a driver, a pilot and a gunner.
Uh-huh.
You've got two players in another plane, pilot. And a gunner. And Tom, this game has very special artwork because the artwork is A, good.
Yes.
B,
dogs.
Features dogs.
I thought you were going to save that till later on. I'm really glad you brought it up at the top.
It's maybe the most important thing about this game.
It's so good.
The dogs, they're four different breeds of dogs as well. So it's not just like, do you want to be in the red or blue plane? Sure. But additionally, one of those planes has got like a Pomeranian in it, like behind a machine gun.
One of the dogs kind of looks like a sort of anime protagonist with like a long flowing like mane of hair almost.
The art's really nice.
It's really good.
We also, at least one of the dogs, maybe more. You know that thing where a dog opens its mouth in a window and then the entire...
And it goes like...
Yeah. Well, predictably one of the pilots is doing that because why wouldn't you if you're a dog flying a biplane? This game does
is
it attempts to model in three dimensions. Well, okay. In a card game format, A three-dimensional dogfight. Yes. Now, you might be thinking that sounds confusing because a plane can be, you know, behind you, below you, in front of you, above you. There's the sun involved. Where's the sun? Because the sun does feature as a mechanic in this game.
It does.
Obviously firing into the sun very hard. You can't see anything. But so you might think that a little card game trying to model and fight in three-dimensional space sounds challenging. It sounds like it might be slightly confusing. Might be slightly difficult to teach. Well, let me tell you, you are absolutely right. Holy crap. I've struggled to see Tom sweat more than teaching this game, having read the manual exactly once.
Yes. I think there was definitely, like, I think there's a way you can frame teaching this game that makes it easier to understand. And I did not do that in my teach of this game.
You taught it actually so badly that this game, I don't think this is a bad game.
No,
I don't necessarily think it's a good game.
We put this, you framed it as being the bottom of the run to the litter in this trio
of games. In this
podcast,
yeah.
And I think that's true. But I also do think this game has a real, it has a heart of gold.
I agree.
I think, though, that there's a lot of things that are holding it back from reaching its true potential.
Yeah, maybe. I'm always wary of being like, oh, it's a good design. It's just if only it had gotten A and B right.
Right.
You know, I think it's very difficult to like lift a game up by just tweaking one thing or two.
I
think it's a cool idea.
Very cool
idea. I think
idea.
There's some really nice stuff in the execution. I think in play, it's maybe a little clunky, but let's talk about it.
Tell me how it works.
Okay. So as I say, you've got two players in each plane. And this is a real-time game. So in each round of the game, over the course of 20 seconds on each team, let's imagine Tom and I are flying a plane.
Yeah.
And that we're dogs. Ruff, ruff, ruff,
ruff. It's like an audio drama.
I know.
It's a we should Gimlet be doing original. That
so that's really cracked me up. I'm sorry. So you're the gunner, I'm the pilot. In front of us on the same team are four slots we can play cards into. We each have a hand of cards that might be like, this is where the game starts getting tricky. Like, slide your plane to the left or reposition the enemy plane to the right, which I guess is the difference of what direction you're flying and then also cards that relate to where your plane is pointing.
Conceptually, it's quite hard to grasp.
Yes.
But you've got cards that move your plane, move your opponent's plane, or shoot parts of the board where a plane might be.
Correct, yes. But we only have four slots in which to play these cards, such as, like, maybe you want to, most obvious thing, angle the opponent's plane into roughly where you have a gun pointing.
Yeah.
And then in the next slot, play fire that gun.
Yes.
What makes this tricky is that, and also, you know, occasionally hilarious, is that both teams are doing this at the same time. So, like, let's say we want to do that thing of move them into the line of our, like, gun and then fire in slots one and two. Our opponents, however, are also playing cards in their own slots one and two.
Yes.
So if we hear them say, ooh, you know, let's move to the left, we can hear that and be like, okay, well, they're moving to the left. Let's play a different card in our number one slot, which will mean that we have now got them into where we want them to be to fire a gun in slot two.
Yes.
So it's kind of peculiar, right? Because it's a game where you, theoretically, one of the best ways to play is just to say nothing and listen to what the opposing team is saying while the 20-second round timer is running. So
and then that, just throw down a load of cards at the end.
Which relate to exactly what your opponents are doing. But then, of course, if your opponents don't say anything, then...
then you're scuppered.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it says that all communication must be in view of your, like, fellow players, but you can use a little bit of hand signaling.
Yeah, we started doing that. This is where I started to be like, oh man, this game has potential.
Right.
It's where I started realizing, okay, my opponents are going to hear what I say. So I started visibly, like, pointing at cards and in directions to your friend, my gunner.
You can't show your teammate any of your cards.
No.
So you have to sort of like allude to some bits, but it's what you leave in and what you leave out. And thematically, there's something quite nice about this idea of almost like intercepting their radio channel and hearing like garbled suggestions of what they're going
to do. Or gesturing to your pilot with a hand signal like you might do in a biplane.
Yeah.
And then they see that. And then
and they're like, let's shoot them.
Yeah. Just a large, a mimed gesture of firing a machine gun. And they're like, okay. All of this is confused by the fact that you don't have, you have four, of the like eight different cards you might have, you only have four, and some of them might be duplicates.
Yeah.
And then, oh God, just to finish this out with a couple more rules that make this game extra spicy, you win if you can reduce either the enemy pilot or gunner to no cards in deck.
Yes.
And when you shoot them, they discard a bunch of cards from their
six
decks.
Six cards.
A whopping six.
That's so many.
So there's this peculiar thing where it's like you also want to angle your plane with your movement cards so that you are always hitting their gunner, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You always want to be hitting the same spot so your damage is maximized.
Yep, and then there's this other thing where, just as this is the final rule I'll teach, if you choose not to, if you as one player on your team play zero cards that turn, so you just say, gunner, you gun, I'm going to do nothing as the pilot, or right. vice versa, then you that's how you turn your discard pile back into a deck, mm-hmm. which is a rule I thought was super cool. In yeah. order to, you know, have that time to recover not all of your health, but at least the cards you've played.
Exactly.
You
yeah.
have to do nothing.
And that's also can get you into a really tricky spot where if you cannot be expecting to take damage and then you take a shed load of it, you can burn through your discard pile. You don't just immediately get to redraw from your deck. Like, you have to consciously make that decision to turn one into the other, which I think is really like quite interesting. Where there could have been a situation where like you're sitting pretty on a deck of like 18 cards and you're like, huh, well, I'm on the other side. To where the, oh, this is where it gets hard to conceptualize what this game looks like.
While teaching anything about this game or even talking about it on a podcast, it's very easy to become disheartened.
Yeah.
I think. It's very easy uh-huh. to hear what you're saying and be like, there's
this
no way this
any
makes
sense to people.
Yeah.
At home. We should get into that because I think that's our number one problem with the game is the fact that it is a confusing, it is a conceptually challenging game to teach.
Yes.
Because I can't even, yeah, you're right. It is disheartening. I don't even want to try. I don't even want to start. It's like you've got these little boards in front of you where you have three slots, left, middle, and right. So you've got your pilot, left, middle, right, your gunner, left, middle, and right. The plane of your enemy is always on your set of boards, right?
Yes, because oh my God, Tom, why are you doing this?
And it's where their plane is on your boards that determines where you can shoot them. But if their plane is on one of your boards, well, which it will be, then that's the
that shows
player
where
who
the,
gets shot.
Yes, that shows where the incoming machine gun fire is.
Yeah.
So your board displays your plane from the perspective of your dogs.
Of you.
Of your dogs, right? Which means the art asset on the plane just shows a close-up of some wings.
Right.
You then have a tiny little miniature plane.
It's quite big, actually. Well,
okay.
Chunky
cardboard
plane.
I'm just trying to
plane.
Make this easier for our listeners.
Yeah, by shrinking it down.
Right, yeah. So you have a tiny little plane that you then put on your board that shows where that tiny plane in the distance is. Mm-hmm. So if it's on the gunner side, it means, oh, the gunner can see it, which means if it shoots you, the gunner's getting shot.
Yes.
Whereas if you can kind of, what it is in my head is you can do like a barrel roll and turn your plane upside down.
Right.
Which is what happens when you move the little miniature plane onto the pilot side, because then the pilot is saying like, okay, if they fire at us,
yep.
I'll be the one to get shot.
Yeah.
We have to move on.
Oh,
we,
it's just
no,
weird. It's just hard.
This is kind of the review of the game. Super interesting, fun, spicy. I found a lot about it really interesting.
And funny as well. Very funny. When it's like, when, you know, like me and Kaffel were like thinking that we could do something really sneaky and we're like playing our cards and sort of like trying to snake you, we were like, oh yeah, we've got this all like sussed out, they're gonna be right in front of our gun, like they're not gonna move this turn because they think we're doing something else. We put all of our gun cards in the same spot and then you just move one to the left and then absolutely hammer us.
Nothing
that turn
works
afterwards.
Yeah, I think yeah. my favorite thing about this is, as much as the dogfighting thing is cool, my favorite thing about this is just two teams of players in real time playing cards into slots while listening to what the other team are doing.
Yes.
And I think that's really strong.
It has a little spritz of sort of Captain Sonar there, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about Captain Sonar while we were talking about this.
And I think that it's for players who cannot get the requisite number of Captain Sonar players, this might be something that's in the ballpark of an alternative.
It's certainly interesting. And if you get good at teaching it, I think it could be really fun.
If you can, yeah. And I think that there's, if I were to see this game, you know, if to make it something that we'd recommend, it would have to be like, there were those little sort of small things that we found really frustrating, like the fact that the cards don't hold naturally, they don't splay left or right evenly.
Do they not all splay in the wrong direction?
They all splay, because it's like, if it's a shoot left card, then it has the shoot left symbol on the left of the card, and if it's a shoot right card, it has the shoot right symbol on the right of the card, if I remember correctly.
So yeah, if you fan your cards out, there's no way you can see the numbers on all
yeah,
the
it's,
cards.
Yeah, it's a little just messy around the edges, but the core of it, I think, is strong.
Let's talk about a game with an even stronger core.
Oh, here we go.
And also has really funky art.
Let's go. Next up on this podcast, we're going to talk about a game called Nawali, designed by Gonzalo Alvarez and Will Rogers, with art from Gonzalo Alvarez. It's a stunning-looking little Aztec Pokemon-style game.
This is... Would you like... Mm-hmm. Dear listener, listen to this. Would you like to learn about just the weirdest, most disturbing chunks of Aztec mythology while playing a little Pokemon game that feels like Magic the Gathering, while looking at just the cutest little pictures of deer and foxes.
We can start with the art in this game because it's so delightful. It's in so that good. Kind of like blocky Aztec sort of style.
Like side-on.
Yeah.
Like two-dimensional, almost medieval.
It kind of reminds me of how, if you've ever played the Monster Hunter games, like there's always depictions of the monsters that are like extremely simplified, 2D-ified versions of the monsters. Yeah. Everything kind of looks like that, but much more bright and poppy and colourful.
Yes, except in Monster Hunter where they just made all these animals up.
Yep.
I guess the Aztecs made these animals up too, because there's, there's not like a big mythical frog that shoots lightning.
There could be.
But I mean, in real life...
It was a different time.
You're right. It was many moons ago. And who can say what the Aztecs saw
what evolution has done to the giant frogs of the past.
Yeah, you know, this is very problematic of me. Okay, would you like to get... So if you would like to Google this game, we would very much encourage just Googling it, looking at the art and having a good time.
Yes.
And there's a lot of art in this game as well. Great, like for a tiny little... two-person battler.
Mm-hmm.
We played with some of the starter decks and we probably saw about half of the
it was delightful. Yeah, and every single piece was completely delightful.
We
and...
just kept showing each other stuff. Hey, I'll tell you what, also, as we're going to get into the rules, you know, like one of the problems with these two-player Magic the Gathering style battlers mm-hmm. is like, you enjoy taking your turn and you spend your resources and animals and you attack with all of your animals and you cast a cool spell. Everything you're doing feels good. And then you just have to sit there for 4 minutes while your opponent does bad things to you.
Yes.
One redeeming feature in this game is that when you're like, I'm spending 4 energy to summon this snake with knives for eyes,
mm-hmm.
you'd be like, look at this. And I'd be like, that's so weird.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah. So that was like some sugar in the
and I think
bitter tea of your turn.
There's a really nice range as well from the artwork where it's like some of the pieces for the sort of like low level creatures are just like a cute possum. And then it's like the five energy costs, the really expensive things are like, oh boy, man-made horrors beyond my comprehension.
Oh yeah. You get the most high level things are mm-hmm. like you have a little avatar, which is like your planeswalker, I guess.
Yes.
Like which is like the highest level animal in the game. You made the cosmos.
Yeah.
And I was a creature that when I transformed, I became just a knife.
A knife holding knives.
A knife holding 2 knives. Yeah. With an open mouth and huge teeth.
There was something so funny about the way that we said we weren't going to look at the other side of our like summoned, of our actual avatars, character because they flip over. And then it was so funny at the end of the game when you flip yours over because you were complaining the whole game that your knife deck or your knife build didn't have enough knives in it. And then you flip over that card and it's a knife made of knives.
It's rock solid. It's very funny. We're going to talk more about knives and some of the very funny player abilities in this.
Should I talk about how the game works?
I think so.
So you've basically got a little deck of cards that you construct at the start of the game. We played with the starter decks, but you always do a little bit of a draft where you choose a few aminals to go into your deck. Your deck is made up of aminals, or nawals as they're called in the mythology, and spell cards. Then what you're going to do is draw a hand of 5 cards and you play a game where you go back and forth playing cards into 4 lanes on the board. So you can imagine there's sort of 4 columns for you to play animals into and attacking your opponent. It's very sort of standard building blocks of a sort of play things into a lane, attack an opponent. And every time you attack, you take some of these gems, which are essentially health, but they're a pool that's sort of shared by both players.
Yes, it's Magic the Gathering, but rather than you both having like 16 health in this game, it's 13, right?
13,
kind of 13 abstract health point gems in the middle.
Yes.
If you attack 4, you take 4 of those.
Yep.
But then if I do 4 damage to you, I take those 4 back.
Yes.
So it's when one player has 13 more damage done than the other.
Yeah, yes. And well, there's a... You will win.
Yes.
It's like a tug of war is maybe the best way to describe it. It's only when the rope is all the way over on your side do you actually win the game. So without getting fully into the weeds of how the actual individual turns operate, of like how the order of play and stuff, I'll talk about what this game kind of does differently to other games of its type. What are the sort of the USPs? Mm. What are the big sells? You've got these shapeshift powers, which I find kind of delightful. So when you play an animal, it has its own little ability. But later on, what you can do is play another animal, another Nawal, on top of it, healing it fully and adding a new ability and stats to it. So you might have like a level 1 lizard that completely...
the lizard whose printed ability is lizard.
Yeah.
And what a lizard means, you take 1 less damage.
Yeah, lizard's a tank.
Yeah.
Right. Lizard, which is different to house, which is a different kind of tank.
This really made us laugh. The dog has the printed ability dog. Like, you know, these are keywords like in Magic the Gathering, there's flying, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the dog has dog, the lizard has lizard, and then the bear has house. which we kept laughing at. And then a variety of animals have the printed ability of knife.
Or grass.
Grass, yeah. The possum had grass.
I love the ability knife. That's maybe my favorite in the game.
It's really good. Knife is, you just do a little extra damage and heal three.
They're all quite sort of like standard abilities that you'd sort of like come to expect. But the way that you can merge them and create these sort of chimeras that will do some weird, freaky things.
Yes, suddenly you're a snake with a knife.
Yes. Which in game terms will mean that you can like move a lane before attacking. So you can combine like what is already a nasty card with another even nastier card to make something that's like unkillable.
It just, you know, it just felt, this is not necessarily true or accurate and it's not problematic, but it felt very Aztec-y to me.
Like, yeah, sure.
To be playing in the paddling pool of like Aztec imagery and shape-shifting and, you know, this particular aspect of mythology, to have that play so nicely into the game's fundamental mechanic of like, yeah, your eagle can shapeshift into a snake.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, you know, that it just, I don't know. It felt like a really nice marriage of theme and design.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. They have that as a mechanic, and they also have with the spells, there are sort of various items you can equip your monsters with.
So you can be a snake with a club.
A snake with a knife and a club.
Yeah, God.
That's shapeshifting into a turkey.
And then you put it in a jacket to make it really safe. Not that you could do that, because you can't have two equipment items.
Have two items at one time. We were sort of perpetually laughing at all the strange. That's a good point for the game, is that we were always laughing about the slightly odd combinations we were coming up with as we were going through the game.
Yeah, like, even I'm just saying sentences like, you know, okay, my deer is going to swallow this tiger. Yeah. And
my deer is going to use its inherited vulture abilities.
It reminds me, you know, you're making it sound like Mage Wars, where, you know, that amazing game that had the plastic spell books that used to be in my collection.
I really want to play that at some point.
It's really good, but that is the game where, like, you have a squirrel, like a level one squirrel in the turn one, then your opponent doesn't kill it, so you're like, well, I'll cast this spell to make it bigger. Well, I'll cast this spell to make it on fire.
Yeah.
Then you're being hunted by a vampiric giant squirrel that
in
suddenly,
a monster truck or something.
At some point, yeah.
Yes. We had a good time playing this game.
It's good.
It's good. In the sort of, I don't think either of us would say that you should go out and buy it. It's not the next big two-player hit that's going to make you, you know, sing from the rooftops.
So what I actually did like about it, we had that podcast a while ago where we looked at a lot of head-to-head collectible card games that
Flesh and Blood.
Yeah, Flesh and Blood.
What's the other one we played? Soulforge Fusion.
Yep.
That's the one.
These games come along and so often they're the product of Kickstarter and they're really, or like even the one we liked, which was to do with the alternate retelling of Eastern Asia around the time of Genghis Khan.
Oh yeah, World Breakers.
Yeah. So these games are really good, but so often they are, you know, there's lots and lots of cards in the deck. They're created with an eye to world building and expansions.
Sure.
What I really liked about Noali is it was one of these games of like, yes, you're going to have creatures, you're going to put them down. Radlands is another one.
Oh, yeah.
Radlands felt like a game that was really designed for expansions. But Noali is like, no, this is a small box.
Yeah.
And it's just good.
It feels very sort of like singular. It's like, it's so small.
It's small. The box is small. The game is entirely complete. This does not in any way feel like it's laying the groundwork for like, oh, well, we're going to put this rule in because it's going to be useful when there are expansions later.
Right.
It's like, no, the game's rules and the size of the box all exist to support quite a small game that's also quite quick.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, was that we were sort of thinking that like I was getting ready to play a game that would be like these games often are, a long sort of back and forth slog where it's like, especially when it's like you've got to take 13 points, you've not just got to get 13 points to win, you've got to take and hold 13 points that is like a shared pool between you, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like you winning means the other person, I was going to say you winning means the other person is losing, but that's true of all games. But you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. But actually, this game, you know what? I'm kind of coming around on Noali. We already liked it. But one of the things that it does that's different from Magic is your decks are small, right? You have like maybe what? Like 8 animals and...
Like, yeah, something like
10
that.
Animals and 8 spells. Something so you have 18 cards in your deck. You start with 5 in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going back and forth with the manual before we started playing of like, well, what happens if you run out of cards? What's the rule for when you draw up and shuffle? You don't.
Yeah.
You do not pick those cards up ever. When your deck is gone, it's gone.
Yes.
Which then plays really nicely into the rule that on your turn, once per turn, you can pitch an animal into the bin from your hand.
Into hell.
Into hell. Into the bit of the rollout mat with a fire printed on it. So you throw that possum into a fire and then you get 2 energy. But in a game, that's such an interesting decision in a game where there are only 18 cards in your deck.
Yes.
So, yeah. But that's... So I lost, because often when I play these games, and often the reason I'm I sometimes feel more comfortable with them than you because of all the Netrunner experience. I'm playing the long game. I'm thinking about things in terms of building my economy and trying to just get the better of you in every encounter of our monsters. So by the end of the game, I have more monsters than you and then I can win.
Sure.
That's how you beat me in Nawali twice, because actually it's so fast that throwing monsters away and just hammering your opponent's health.
Yeah, if you can seize an opportunity while it's there, then you can, yeah, it's like the ways that I won were just like, you know, you made sort of laid a risky bed to lie in and I was like, oh, I'm gonna take all the covers off.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense at all, but
no,
that's
but
what
it
happened.
Was a cute analogy.
Yeah, okay, I'll take it.
So yeah, Nawali is, I mean, so more so than Dogfight, which I think I would only recommend in a really specific case.
Sure.
If anyone was like, "Ooh, Nawali looks really cool," I would not say don't buy it.
No.
The very highest praise of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. It's cute,
it's good.
It's solid, it's good, it's funny, and like also
killer theme, killer box art. It's good. Also, I'll say this just because I don't know where else we'll cover it, but we might cover it. I don't know. I need to talk to Matt about it because it was a while since we played it. But Mindbug, the Richard Garfield's new weird little card game experiment, hits on very similar beats to this.
Is that the one? No, that's not the game where animals take control of other animals.
Yeah, by... No, it basically is. It's basically like you have a similar sized deck. It's like 10 cards or 12 cards, something very, very small. The twist of this one is that you have one. You have two Mindbugs, which is when a player plays one of their cards, you can be like, actually no, I'm playing that instead. And I thought it would lead to a game that's like really wacky and bizarre, because I also think a point, you know, I don't think going into Nawali you should expect a game that is like super like razor tight and focused and balanced and like, I don't know, I think it's a little wacky for some people, definitely.
Maybe.
I think it's the not like the ways that you can combine powers can get like quite silly.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. I think especially if you like if you played it a few times, you could probably get some like absolutely horrible like doom stacks of monsters that would just
maybe. But then I think part of the game is realizing that one of your animals, your opponent, is building and shape-shifting and equipping
like,
an animal that's
I'll
awful.
Kill them
it's
before
like,
they can do that.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, the point being is that Mindbug, we were really pleasantly surprised by. I would really recommend people take a look at that as well if they are in the market for a little two-player card game.
Mindbug does feel like it's more setting up a little
yeah
bit
I think
of
it
brand.
Has it, I mean it must be it has a little expansion out already I think but it's also like it is far smaller in scope than I expected, and I also thought that it would be like a sort of very wacky silly game, and it is that, like the art is really silly, the like the ways that you're like pinching opponents cards is like it's inherently very funny, but at the same time it's way more like tactical and chunky than I thought. That core mechanic I thought was just a gimmick, but it's a very good one.
Wow. After being mean to games that are a little bit like Magic the Gathering, but different, are we softening up on magics?
I don't think that Mindbug is much like Magic the Gathering. It's more
any
like
any game where you slap down a creature and then use it on your turn to attack your opponent.
It's just like Yu-Gi-Oh.
I think so.
Okay. We might cover more Mindbug soon.
And finally, it's a game that Tom and I still, I mean...
We still disagree on, you think?
Well, no, I was just going to say, I was going to say that we still don't recommend you rush out and buy.
Nope.
I mean, Charlie Sedan has told so many people to rush out and buy so many things.
Yeah, this is our sort of penance era, isn't it?
Yeah, no, this is like, you don't need this.
No, but, you don't need any more games.
It was our favorite thing we played on this podcast together, and it's good, solid, pretty...
And fun.
And...
And that's the end of the podcast.
This is a game by Akiyama Koryo and Kozu Yusei. This is a game where you play pirate...
What's it called?
Sail.
It's called Sail.
Sorry.
You didn't introduce it properly.
I didn't. It's called
Who's
Sail.
It by?
This is a game by Akiyama Koryo and Kozu Yusei, and it's called Sail.
Who's it published by, Quinns?
It's published by Allplay.
What were they called previously, Quinns?
I don't... What?
BoardGameTables.com.
Oh!
Who's the art by, Quinns?
That's the guy who did the bloody inn. Why are you doing this to me?
That's what? Right. It's Weberson Santiago.
I hate you.
That's games.
Wow.
That's, I enjoyed that a lot.
That's all the time.
I got a real sense of power from doing that.
Good for you. That was great.
No, teach us a game.
You've broken my spirit. Like if I teach you the game, are you going to ask me more pop quiz questions? Oh, okay. The back does say take on the role of pirate crewmates. Okay.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
It's a pirate game.
This is a game where
a pirate game.
So help me God. This is a game where you and exactly one other player are going to be steering a ship through a narrow channel.
A pirate ship.
A pirate ship through a narrow channel. And you are going to be steering this ship through the only methods that pirates use to steer ships, which is a trick-taking game.
What's a channel?
A channel. It's a channel tunnel. That's me quoting Greg Proops from a stand-up tape that I had as a child in the 90s.
Wow.
In which he referred to the channel tunnel as a channel.
There are like three people right now who are pogging out.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So in the game of Sail, you're going to put a board in the middle. The board shows a channel of sea spaces. Mm-hmm. On those sea spaces, you're going to have krakens, where if the boat goes on there, your boat's going to get slapped and take damage by, from the kraken. You have got clouds. You have to pass the clouds by a certain time or you lose. And you've got islands. What happens if you drive a boat into an island, Tom? That's right. Nothing. Nothing happens, which means you've wasted your movement. So how are you going to be moving the boat down this grid towards the like finish line where you get to pirate heaven or whatever?
Tell me.
You're playing a trick-taking game. I told you already.
Okay.
Why weren't you paying attention? So in this game, which only has three colors of cards from 1 to 9, do I have to teach trick-taking? Where are we at with this?
You can say it's a must-follow trick-taking game.
Okay. But we're not going to explain any more than that. Okay, it's too hard.
Listen, if people are still listening to this podcast...
After the dogfight explanation?
Yeah, they're
hardcore and they understand trick-taking.
They suffered through dogfight, now they're here.
But what if they suffered through dogfight and they're like, I don't know what a trick-taking game is and now we're abandoning
them. And they can leave!
Okay, well they can also go to Wikipedia and find out what a trick-taking game is. So in this game, you and your co-pirate have 9 cards each.
Co-pirate's good.
The cards might show things like the number 9 on each card... of each suit shows a whale.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers 1 to 3 show a ship's wheel and a kraken.
Yep. Look,
it's complicated. I'm really not going to get into all the various combinations.
You're pretty close. 4 and 5 have cannons.
Yep.
And 6, 7, and 8 have wheels.
Okay. Yeah. And then the 9 has the whale. Yeah. Okay, great.
Whale.
So what's going to happen is you're going to play a card. Like, let's say I play the 7, which shows a ship's wheel in the gray color. Tom then has to follow by playing a gray card. What happens if we both, and then the combination of icons we get determines what happens. Some of this is pretty self-explanatory. If I play a ship's wheel and you also manage to play a ship's wheel, we're going to move the ship. If you play a card with a wheel and a kraken on it, and I play a wheel, I tried to move and you tried to move, but there's a kraken. Whap! We take damage through a kraken deck, which basically, if I get into it now, I'll get sidetracked.
It's sort of like a game timer. Like the more cards that you, every time you take a damage from the kraken, you take cards out of this deck.
However,
and if that deck completely runs out, you lose.
Right. But interestingly, the kraken deck at the start of your voyage contains exclusively cards with the kraken's tail on. So initially, the cards you're holding aren't going to feature many tentacles because most of the 1, 2s, and 3s are in the kraken deck. Therefore, the kraken's less likely to attack you, but the more the kraken attacks, the worse it gets. So you're trying to put those cards back in. By if one of you plays a card, one of the 1s, 2s, 3s with a ship's wheel and a kraken, and the other one plays a cannon, then thematically what's happened is that kraken has shown up and the other person has shot it with a cannon.
Yep.
What happens if you play 2 cannons? Let's not get into it. It's complicated. but what this means is you, as you play Sail, are experiencing a game of hand management together in silence because talking is not allowed.
It's like the crew.
Like all the best card games. And just like the crew. See, I was being sarcastic, but the crew is one of the best card games.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's also a cooperative trick-taking game where talking is not allowed.
I think some talking is allowed in the crew. I think if you're a purist, I got in trouble on stream recently where we were playing Sky Team, a game where ostensibly no communication is allowed. But because we were streaming, like that was kind of a hard sell.
Complete silence.
Yeah. So I kept being like, woo, oh, I shouldn't say that. And like making like various noises that I then had to apologize for.
I have to say, some talking has got to be allowed when you're playing games like Sail and
Make
the crew.
It a little loose. It's got to be a little
loose. It's got to be a little loose because the best thing about either of those games is someone doing something and you going, oh! Sail, I'll say right, I mean, Sail doesn't have the thing in the crew where if someone screws up, you just lose.
Yeah,
Sail
that's
true. Is much more a game of like gradation, like where you can play, like someone moving, you getting hit from the kraken, that just feels bad.
Yeah.
Just getting a bit of extra movement, that feels good. But ultimately, you have to play round after round after round, trying to manage the amount of damage the Kraken's doing, trying to shoot the Kraken to manage that deck, and trying to actually move forward. But what's very cute about movement is because you're not on a grid, the grid is like a series of diamonds.
Yes.
Whenever you move, the player that won the trick slides the ship off the diamond in their direction. So you have to kind of zigzag your way forward. But as there are like things like islands and stuff you want to avoid, there's interesting things of like you might do something that's disadvantageous for your hand just to get past a kraken that you might otherwise accidentally steer into. I wonder if this is exactly as confusing as Dogfight.
No, I think it's fairly self-explanatory.
Okay. Anyway.
Although not self-explanatory, but it's not
We're
too
explaining
hard
it right now. It doesn't explain itself.
A trick-taking game where the cards you play move a little ship on a little channel,
there
as you
go.
Put it.
There you go. What do you think? It's good.
It's good. It is definitely good. I was really confused by it for the first few turns we played it, I was like, there's a little card reference that shows you the spread of symbols on cards that was so useful.
Yes.
But when you start getting into it, and that one rule that we forgot the first time we played, but remember the second, of passing one card to your teammate. Oh, I love a trick-taking game that has that in it.
It's very good.
We played a game called Robotrick recently that I talked about this on the last podcast.
You did, yeah.
That has that similar, like, I just think that regardless of context, it's a killer mechanic. It just feels good to do. Like passing your opponent something and them trying to, or your co-pirate, and them trying to interpret what you mean. And then when you pull something off based on that information, when you give them a card at the start of the round, and then at the end of the round, you do a play that references the information you gleaned at the start. Oh, spicy.
Playing whales in this game is also hella spicy. So the fact that there are only three whales in the deck, right? It's the number 9 of each color. Mm-hmm. But because you have to follow color, so if you play the brown whale,
yep.
I have to play a brown card if I've got it, which means I can't do what you want, which is both playing a whale. That's yes. how you move the ship essentially two spaces at once, bypassing
straightforward.
It's amazing. Mm. But for that to happen, you are first off, you need to know that if you're playing a green whale, you need to know or hope. And hope is the fun part.
Yes.
Your opponent has no green cards, and also that they are holding a whale of another color.
And so when you can sort of correctly infer that and you sort of slam dunk it, it feels so good.
Of slam dunking in this game. Playing a picture of tentacle, hoping your opponent plays a cannon, and they do.
Yep.
It's a lot of probabilities as well, because my favorite thing about this game is it's so boring. But you can see how many cards are burned, right? Because you receive 9 cards each. So in the first round of the game,
it's like 3 cards.
9 cards each and 3 that are out of the game.
Yeah.
So you know that statistically there's a 1 in 7 chance. Well, I mean, you look at your own hand, I guess it's 1 in 4 that your opponent has it or not. And then depending on how much damage you do to the Kraken, that deck gets bigger or smaller.
Yes.
So the more damage the Kraken does to you, the more burned cards there are. So the less knowledge you have of what's in your opponent's hand.
And when you sort of deal damage back to the Kraken, when you start putting cards back in its deck to sort of stop it from defeating you in a mechanic that I won't bother explaining, that is sort of doubly good. Because firstly, it sort of like means that you have safe turns, but also it's feeding, you know, it's making your probabilities for the next round even better.
I think
this is really good. The more I think about it, the more I like it. I think it's full of those like high five moments. I also, a mechanic we didn't explain that I thought was really funny in our game was if you win, it's 4 tricks. If either player wins 4 tricks, that's what triggers the end of the round.
Oh, yeah.
And, there was that one round where I was so excited that I could pull off our whale play that even though Quint had won no tricks, ostensibly a possible 4 movement that he could have done by the end of the round, I played the whale anyway. And you were like, what are you doing? And we moved on to the next. It's good. It's really good.
But you knew, it was the fact that the trick before, I did something that informed you I had no green cards.
Yeah, and I was like,
you played the green card whale. It's like, dude.
I was like, I see what you're doing
it's
here.
It's very funny. It does. So sales, it looks gorgeous. Really, really happy that Webbers and Santiago is still working in board games, because I absolutely love their art.
Like, it's great.
I just think it's really good. The production is really good. BoardGameTables.com, once again, with a small, good, tight box.
BoardGameTables.com famously make good little small box games with some of the worst manuals in all of the industry.
You learned this one. How was the manual?
I think the manual for this one is good.
Nice.
I think it's a rare good board game tables manual.
Okay, great.
Congrats. All play, they're now called, sorry.
There is only one problem I have with this game.
What's your problem?
Which is this, Sail is a game where you kind of, it's not necessarily a game you want to show to someone, it's a game you want to get good at with someone, right? You can disagree.
I can disagree.
It sounds like you're disagreeing right now. You're disagreeing. Well, all I'm saying is that the thing that the crew has going for it, as a cooperative tricking game, obviously it has 50 missions that no one will ever play. Like, right. It's just insanely long. I mean, I'm sure some people have finished the crew, obviously.
I'm sure.
But like, the point is that, you know, it's a co-op game where there's always another reason to play it again.
There's always a goal.
It's going to get a bit hard and it's going to change. Mm. Sail has like six difficulty settings.
And not many sort of like sliders to play with in terms of variables. Like, the crew has like loads of weird stuff it starts doing to your like scenarios. This is just like placement of where tentacles and where islands are, and the board gets like slightly longer. But then we haven't played those scenarios, so maybe they could really change the shape of the game. Maybe they really turn it into something else. But I agree that it immediately doesn't have the longevity that you'd want out of the crew, like, but it's still very good. It's still very snappy and poppy and
I would absolutely, like, if you get Sail knowing that you might only
show it to a couple different people and be like, look at this weird little game.
I feel like, well, on the one hand, I'm saying this as a criticism that it's a game that maybe only has a few hours life. Mm. On the other hand, when was the last time I played a board game in my collection for more than a few hours?
Yes.
That wasn't like a legacy game.
Very good point.
I am so excited for our review of Ticket to Ride Legacy.
We were going to talk about it on this podcast, but we're not.
Because we like it so much.
Yes.
That we're going
to. It's going to just be hard getting the people to play that game, though. It's always hard getting people for a legacy. But like, we've got to organize them, Quinns.
That's your problem. And you're just messing it up. This isn't a problem. This is just you failing.
Oh, I'm not doing my job properly.
But the people should know at home. Let's tease it. First off, I'm a big fan of Ticket to Ride.
You
had not played Ticket to Ride until playing Ticket to Ride Legacy, which is
false.
But you just...
I could pretend for drama. Luke, do you want me to pretend for drama?
Someone else in our game hadn't played.
What the hell's a train?
Okay, fine. It's good.
It's good. Yeah, no, it's proper good. We've been very pleasantly surprised by it so far. I think I have one criticism of it, but I'll save that for the video.
I have at least more than one. Because
I have a missing component criticism.
I have one and maybe more.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, but the main criticism I have is just that you beat me, even though I played a complete blinder.
I think I played a complete blinder.
Okay.
I made bank off of you, Quinns. But we can't talk about mechanics too much because of spoilers.
Yeah, we should wrap this
podcast
up. You
know, did I tell you about the fact that that game... Sorry, yeah, you tried to get out of here, but I got to tell you. We got an embargo document from Days of Wonder about
Ticket to Ride Legacy
to say, here's the things you can cover in embargo or not. And I went to go and check the embargo document to make sure that I didn't like spoiler anything on this podcast because we're going to talk about it. I went to go and check it and they've like deleted the embargo document. So I don't know what I'm meant to talk about and when.
Oh.
So I might get in trouble with Days of Wonder in the very near future for spoiling everything in Ticket to Ride Legacy.
Or anything in Ticket to Ride Legacy.
Yeah.
They might be like, don't talk about if you beat Quinns and you've already broken it.
Don't talk about your wins and or losses.
Okay, you got to get out of here.
Okay, bye.
Okay, oh, well, all right. That was weird. You have to get out of here and then do some film some B-roll.
I got to go film some B-roll.
So I think we should wrap this podcast up.
Oh, okay.
Bye.
Oh, no, you did it to me.